The Holy Gospel according to St. John, the second chapter.
Glory to you, O Lord.
The Passover of the Jews was near, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. In the temple he found people selling cattle, sheep, and doves, and the money changers seated at their tables. Making a whip of cords, he drove all of them out of the temple, both the sheep and the cattle. He also poured out the coins of the money changers and overturned their tables. He told those who were selling the doves, "Take these things out of here. Stop making my Father's house a marketplace." His disciples remembered that it was written, "Zeal for your house will consume me." The Judeans then said to him, "What sign can you show us for doing this?" Jesus answered them, "Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up." The Judeans then said, "This temple has been under construction for 46 years, and you will raise it up in 3 days?" But he was speaking of the temple of his body. After he was raised from the dead, his disciples remembered that he had said this, and they believed the scripture and the word that Jesus had spoken. The Gospel of the Lord. The text before us this morning from St. John is a rich, full text. There's a lot going on here. We have to take a look at what's the context of it, because it's Passover and because everybody has to come to Jerusalem, because they have to get their lamb. They have to get the lamb that's going to be eaten at the Seder meal. And it has to be sacrificed. It has to have no blemishes. It has to be completely... integral, the lamb does, before it can be offered as a sacrifice. And so if you are in Galilee and you have to schlep all the way up to Jerusalem, you can't bring a lamb from Galilee to Jerusalem without it getting some kind of blemish. That's the point. And so instead, what they do is they establish this place, this market, where you can come and you can buy your lamb or whatever you need to have sacrificed, and you can then have a proper lamb for the sacrifice. It's really practical. It's really a good idea. And this is, in order to stay kosher, in order to stay keeping the Torah, this is what has to happen. So they've set this up, and it seems to work. Over the years and over the centuries, what happens is that before Marshall McLuhan, what happens is the medium becomes the message. Instead of the temple being the place where people come to encounter God, where God dwells, a place for all nations to come to pray before God, slowly the whole thing starts to turn, and the market begins to influence how people are seeing the relationship between God and humanity. Instead of it being, God comes to dwell with us in the temple, in the holy temple, and wants us there to have a relationship with us, a relationship of love. Slowly, that relationship starts to turn into this relationship of exchange, a mercantile relationship. So it starts to be that you offer to God your lamb, your goat, your turtle doves, whatever it is you're going to offer, and in exchange, God will give you something. Right? So, and this is not different than the prophets of Baal. This is how all of the religions Fertile Crescent, that's how it worked, because the gods who were there before Israel arrived, that's how it worked. The people offered them their grain and their sacrifices in exchange for their God offering them good weather for their crops. So Israel sort of adopted that, and little by little the marketplace started to be exactly like that. We're going to give God this, and in exchange God's going to give us that. And that's what Jesus has, is who comes to the temple in the story today. I think that's what he is responding to. That this has become an exchange, a relationship, yes, but a relationship of exchange and not a relationship of love. And so he takes a whip of cord, makes a whip out of cords, and he drives out the money changers. He does this prophetic act of saying, no, this is not a marketplace. Stop making my father's house a marketplace. The transition had been made, and Jesus was prophetically calling it out, saying that is not what the house of God is for. We also tend to think of things in exchange terms, in mercantile terms. It is really hard not to. And even those of us who are good Lutherans and who ought to know better, we turn things into works righteousness, into offerings of God, so that God will love us. We will love God. God will love us. We call it faith. And we say, oh, if we have faith, God will love us. Or we offer our faith. We don't have to do anything else, but we have to believe. And if we believe, then God will love us. God will accept us. And of course, Martin Luther thought offering God our faith that we had generated ourselves to be one of the religious works that he rejected. It is never that we give God something in exchange for what God is going to give us. God simply gives us love, salvation, healing, hope. All of those things that God gives us, gives it to us. And if we see it as that and we receive it as that, wonderful. But if we don't receive it as that, if we don't see it as this great gift of God, wonderful. God still gives it. We aren't required to have faith before God will do what God's nature does, which is to give of God's self to us. In the scriptures it says, God makes it rain on the just and the unjust. God makes it rain on the faithful and those who have no faith. This, who do not believe. This is simply the nature of God. But we want to make it where we want to give something to God in order to get back from God something. That isn't the way of God's nature. And so Jesus sees this, makes the cords, the whip of cords, and drives that out, turns over our tables. No, that's not it. It is a relationship, but it is a relationship of love. It is a relationship of self-giving. And it is in that that Jesus expresses this incredible zeal for the house of God. And the disciples remember, zeal for my house, for your house will consume me. And they're thinking maybe that Jesus' zeal for the Father's house consumes him, and he does this thing. And that's one way of looking at it. And on the other hand, this quote, this zeal for my house will consume me, is from the 69th Psalm. And in the 69th Psalm, what it is the person, the psalmist who's saying this psalm, is actually being persecuted because he loves the house of God. He loves the law of God, and he's trying to fulfill it, and he's being persecuted for it. And so is Jesus. And so you can hear zeal for your house will consume me to also mean zeal for your house will be my end. There are other people who have a zeal for the way things are, the way things have been. And they are going to make sure that I am consumed, that I am done away with. And so this is a foreshadowing of what's going to happen to Jesus because of his zeal for the house of God, the way it's to be this place of great encounter with the loving God. And those who have a zeal for the house as it is are going to have something to say about what Jesus does. Now, there are a couple of different ways of having zeal. There's a holy zeal, and there's basically an unholy zeal. How do you discern between those two? Is Jesus' holy zeal just because it's Jesus? And anybody that's acting against Jesus, it's unholy zeal? Don't think so. It's not just that. It's also this, is that unholy zeal always ends up wanting to do away with the person over against whom we are angry or frustrated or whatever. If we can just get rid of them, everything will be fine. And in our zeal, we're ready to do that, to protect what is. On the other hand, Jesus has a zeal for the house of God, but he is not willing to get rid of anybody. He does this casting out of the spirit of the marketplace, yes. But in the end, he is not raising an army to do away with anybody. Instead, he is allowing himself to be done away with. He himself will be consumed. And that's the difference. There's a zeal that wants to get rid of, and there's a zeal that will give our life for. And I think in the midst of these days of our uncivil war that is happening in our country, us against them, we need to be very clear about this. It simply will not do for us to say we can just get rid of the people we disagree with, and we can feel all of the righteous zeal and all of the righteous anger that we want to. But if we say then we have to get rid of those people, then it isn't going to work. That's unholy zeal. Like Elijah slaying the prophets, in the end, there was no life in that. It doesn't work. On the other hand, if we say of the people that we vehemently disagree with, what can I do to demonstrate, to embody a sense of love for them? How can I give of myself for the sake of those I vehemently disagree with? That's the question. It is the very thing that Jesus does in order to embody the very nature of God. This self-giving to people who really might not love God. God says, nevertheless, I'm going to give myself to them anyway. And we are called into that same question. How do I give of myself for the people that I totally disagree with, who I read on the computer about, and then I get angry and say, what are you people thinking? What are you doing? Instead, and I mean, that's an okay thing to say, but now the next step is, where do I go? How do I act in such a way as to embody the love of God for that person, those people whom we disagree with? How do we do that? Why would we do it? Well, we would do it because of this. One, it's because when Jesus says, when the narrator of John says, Jesus was not talking about the temple when he said, destroy this temple and in 3 days I will raise it. He's talking about his own body, which becomes the temple of God. And if Jesus' body becomes the temple of God. And we become a part of the body of Christ, then our bodies also become a temple of God. And not only us, but everybody. The body of human beings is the temple of God. And so how will we approach that temple? Is it in anger and frustration and violence? Or is it in vulnerable self-giving? And I think that the scriptures are clear. The way of Elijah slaying the prophets doesn't work. Jesus giving himself over to those who would destroy him, being vulnerable to them. That's what happens. That's what changes lives. And when Jesus is raised from the dead, we are raised into new life. So that's one. The second thing is, it simply strategically doesn't work. There's this great story that Walter Wangren, is a theologian and a writer, tells about his son. He and his wife are sons, I don't know how old, young, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. And his son gets into this habit of shoplifting. And he goes in and he's stealing stuff. And he gets caught and he gets sent back home. And his mom and dad are like, they're at wit's end. They don't know what to do. They try everything. They try talking to him. They try grounding him. They try everything. It doesn't work. Finally, the two of them decide. Walt Rangren says, I know what I have to do. Have to spank my child. And he's never done it before. So he goes in. After it happens one more time, he goes in. He says, I've done everything. This is the only thing I know left to do. And he begins to spank his child. And as he's spanking his child, he's weeping. Walter is weeping, not the child. The child maybe too, but Walter. He's weeping. The father is weeping. And he's done. He leaves. And lo and behold, the son stops the shoplifting. And after a long time, the son is talking to his mom, and he says something about not shoplifting anymore and why that is, and his mom says, oh, I know why it is. It's because your father spanked you. And the kid says, no, mom, it's not that. It's because dad was crying. And that's what made him change. That's what made him stop doing the unholy thing. And that's what God is calling us to show our own vulnerability, our own grief over the way things are. Not to accept that the way things are, but to grieve over them and to be vulnerable about it. Instead of holding and hiding our vulnerability in anger and hostility. This is the way of Jesus, to be vulnerable. This is the way of God, to be self-giving. And so, at the temple, the relationship with God is this relationship of vulnerable love that's been masked over by this market. And ours is a relationship of love that is being masked over by frustration and hostility and violence. And Jesus is tipping over the tables and saying, that is not the way. Not in the house of God. Not in the temple of God. Not in you, dear brothers and sisters. Not in me. God is alive and well
in every one of us. And it is to that truth we are called to hearken. It is into that truth that we are asked to give of ourselves and thus reveal the coming of the children of God.